We're having a discussion about the issue of Tchiyas HaMesim, the resurrection of the dead, and where it fits into the scheme of things. Because one of the fundamental principles of Judaism is the belief in the phenomenon of the resurrection, that there will be a resurrection of the dead. And that's something everybody agrees on as being a fundamental tenet of Judaism. However, other than that, there's disagreement, there's different opinions as to the particulars that pertain to it. Will this happen to everyone? Who will be resurrected? You know, what's the purpose of the resurrection? Is this to be identified as the ultimate reward, so to speak, paradise, that the righteous will return even after they've died and they've been buried, but at a certain point in time, they'll be returned, which would mean it's a miracle. So that's why it's very significant in terms of one's belief or in terms of one's denial, because it has to do, it's very much connected to the basic fundamentals of Judaism, that God created the world, yesh me'ayin, from nothing. People that have a difficult time with the idea of the resurrection, they say, well, it's contrary to nature. Because you see, in nature, whatever dies, decomposes, and that's it, it's gone. So there's no way that anything could return as a result of the natural order, the ordinary scheme of things, obviously. So we believe that that's a miraculous phenomenon, that God, just like God created the world from nothing in the first place, so too God can restore the individual. Now, the restoration is pretty much means the person, not just the soul. It doesn't mean the return of that soul, because we differentiate between the soul and the body. The idea of the soul returning, I think that's what's referred to as transmigration of souls. That's not part of the beliefs of Judaism. When we talk about resurrection, we're talking about the entire person. That is, of course, the soul, but the person, the physical manifestation. So the person who would be returned, let's say, for argument's sake, that it would occur now. So let's do, we knew somebody, and that person died. And we talk about the person returning, it'll be not just that the personality is familiar to us, those things that are connected to the intelligence, the understanding, but actually you'd recognize the person. Beyond that, you can't get into all these questions. Well, how old will he be? And so on. What condition of the body? And all those things. The Rambam says all those things. People are interested in those kinds of questions. What clothes will they be wearing when they come out? You know, things of that sort. But we don't know the answer to those questions. But that really is not important. What is important, though, is where does this fit into the scheme of things? Is this the ultimate reward? That is, that would be saying that as far as we are concerned, as far as human beings are concerned, the greatest reward, the highest form of existence that we can partake of, or that God will allow us to partake of, will be in a physical setting. And once... is that what it is? That once they return, so then they'll live eternally, and this is their reward. And if you want to call it paradise, you can call it paradise, whatever you want to call it. Although that's a word that's gone into disfavor in this day and age. But the Rambam didn't learn that way. The Rambam did not maintain that the ultimate reward for the righteous is the resurrection. Although the Rambam, of course, did hold of the resurrection, that there is such a thing, but it wasn't for everybody. Because the Rambam's position is that the ultimate reward is what's referred to as Olam Haba, the world to come. The world to come does not mean at some future time. The world to come is relative to Olam Hazeh, meaning it's relative to the life of the individual in physical form. That life goes through two stages. First, the person lives as a earthly being in the physical context. And the purpose of this existence is for the individual to perfect himself. That's the idea that Chazal convey, the prosdar, that this world is like a prosdar. It's like an antechamber leading you to Olam Haba. It's a perfect simile to express this idea. So it's an antechamber. Unfortunately, many people make a mistake, and they treat this world as though this was the ultimate destination. And all the physical pleasures, the emotional pleasures of this world, they build up, they magnify into being the ultimate experience, thereby missing the entire point. That the real element within the individual is the neshama, is the soul. And it has to be perfected. We'll use these words descriptively. It has to be perfected. It does not come to you in a state of perfection. And you are given the tools and the capacities to effectuate the perfection of the soul. That's the antechamber. And in the course of doing so, the more perfected you are, the more you'll be able to derive the enjoyments and the benefits of this world. This world also could be an enjoyable experience, but it can't be an enjoyable experience if a person doesn't approach it with the correct understanding. If a person just follows their natural drives and their instincts and the fantasies, because man is a creature of fantasy, and then you have all these illusions, and people are chasing after illusions. That's why people are unhappy. That's a fundamental of Judaism, that man is going to be unhappy. There's no way he can be happy unless he tries to figure out what the situation is, unless he uses his mind. The truth and the real good of existence is something which can only be apprehended by the mind. And there are very few people that even accept that premise. And they maintain that the path to happiness is pretty much programmed into them. They follow their emotions, their emotional drives, and the ordinary fantasies that everybody has. Pursuit of happiness. Having all your dreams come true. That's what most people live their lives on the basis of dreams. The dreams include wealth, success, friends, family, enjoyments, things of whatever you can fill in the missing blanks. But just pursuing those illusions are not going to lead to happiness because they're illusions. And that we know that when a person achieves those things that are powerful drives, powerful fantasies of wealth and romance and all these things, it leads to tremendous disillusionment and unhappiness. And that's because they weren't real. It was a figment of the imagination. That's an important point to recognize, first and foremost, what not to do, what the evil is. In a sense, that would be evil. Not in the way that most people understand evil, which is purely in terms of destruction and killing others. But evil in the sense of being not in line with the human purpose, a falsification of the reality of human existence. So the view of the Rambam is that the real good that God has in store for us, God had a certain good in store for man when he created man. He created him in a way in which he could relate to a certain good. But it's not going to happen naturally. The good will not be attained naturally, just by being yourself and letting go. It's something which can only be attained through a struggle in which you have to use your mind to discover what it is, and then you have to use your mind to get your nature to be in line with it, to, so to speak, engage in the task of perfection. Thus, the more a person does that, the better they are in this world, because they partake of the good in this world. But nevertheless, that's not the ultimate. This world, no matter how good it gets, is not a situation in which the person can partake of the good in the ultimate way that God intended. And that is something which will happen to the tzaddik. If the tzaddik perfects his soul, he does perfect his soul. So then the soul doesn't die. The body dies because it's physical. So that's the fate of that which is material, but the soul lives on. And that, it attains a higher state. Once it's removed from the constrictions, the limitations of the body, so it attains a higher state and a type of bliss, which the Rambam says we can't really describe. There's no way that you can describe it because we can't relate to something. We can only relate to pleasures that can be experienced psychologically on the emotional level. Because that's the kind of beings we are. So he said that no Navi was able to describe the joy that a person will experience in Olam Haba. Other than we have to know, but it does register on the mind that it's qualitatively superior to anything that could be obtained over here. Thus, for the Rambam, the question really is, what is the purpose of the Tchias HaMeisim? We're taking up the issue of Tchias HaMeisim, which is resurrection, which we explained, means the actual return, the complete return, the restoration of the original person, physically and emotionally, after the person has died. Now we're trying to understand what the function or the purpose of this is according to the Rambam. And the Rambam's position is more challenging because the Rambam does not maintain that the restoration of the physical person is the ultimate reward. The ultimate reward of the righteous is the life of the soul, which occurs as soon as the person dies. It's not a future phenomenon. It existed as soon as a man was created. It lies within man's nature. That is, that's the scheme of things. At first, he perfects himself in this world. And then when the body dies, so the soul lives on. That's the ultimate reward. However, in order to understand the Rambam on the resurrection, you have to now also understand the Rambam with regard to the Yemos HaMashiach, the Messianic era, which the Rambam basically covers in a number of places, but specifically at the end of Hilchos Malachim in the Mishneh Torah. And basically, the Rambam differed from others on his understanding of the Messianic era, because the Rambam maintained that it's not an end, it's a new phase in history. That's probably the best way to put it. It's not the end of times. It's a new era in human history. And olam kiminhago noeg, the world functions according to its natural order. That is to say, the way God ordained the world, the natural order of things, where everything functions according to law and has a certain nature, including man. This, for all we know, could go on eternally. It's not, that's another question, why there'll be an end of the world. It would appear from the Rambam that no, that the world will continue. Except there is a distinction between the current phase of history, it's a historical phenomenon, and the new era, so to speak. There will be a new era in history. In that new era, the world will function in accordance with its natural order. That is, all the living beings, whether it be the forces of nature, whether it be animals, animal life will be the same. The nature of animals will not change, even though there are certain psukim which would seem to go against it. The lion will dwell with the lamb. These are some of the questions that come up, which indicate, and they will not destroy. There are psukim in Tanakh which give the impression that any type of hostility, any type of attack or viciousness will come to an end. So the Rambam addresses that. And the Rambam says that's not to be taken literally. You have to know what's to be taken literally, what's not to be taken literally. So he maintains that those verses are not literal. What are they referring to? You can't just say they're not literal, then you have to say that there's an idea. The idea is, it's a reference to the nations of the world. What Tanakh refers to as the lion and the lamb is a reference to different kinds of nations in the world. There are nations which are powerful and aggressive, predator nations, and they feed off of the smaller ones, the weaker ones that are like the lamb. And that's the course of history, is marked by all of this strife and war. And in this era, that will come to an end. So one of the main features of that era will be the phenomenon of universal peace. Therefore, according to the Torah, what everybody's striving for, the whole idea of achieving a peace through negotiations and diplomacy and international organizations will not be successful. Doesn't mean that people shouldn't try, it could get better or worse, but the ultimate state of peace will only come in that era. The difference being that in this, the way the world is geared today, it's not geared for peace, it's geared for strife. given the nature of the values, which is essentially materialistic and to amass materialism, power, and ego on an individual level, but here we're talking on a national level. That's pretty much what nationalism is. It's the group ego. So inevitably, there's always going to be clashes. Now, statesmen try, those who care, those who have a certain commitment to the ideal of peace, try to deal with that and to work out the different scenarios. All the negotiations today are basically trying to do the best you can with that situation, to set up alliances and different mechanisms and procedures to contain these things. But it's never going to be completely successful. The idea of Yavos HaMashiach is to remove the underlying cause, that there'll be a fundamental change, but not a change in human nature. You might want to call this a change in behavior, a change in societal behavior, which will have to do with the fact that people will recognize the true good. That once people abandon the false good, the pursuit of this false good that all people are motivated by, materialism, as I said, and egotism and all of that, so it's inevitable that there's going to be clashes. There's no way to impose peace. It's a contradiction in terms. However, if we would imagine that all the peoples of the world were to give this up and recognize that this is false and this is illusions, and the only purpose of human existence is to perfect your soul and to obtain greater and greater knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God, so it would be a completely different world, obviously. Then there would be a natural state of peace, which you'll find among people that are all motivated by this type of ideal. So there's no hostility. The only clash is a clash over ideas, but there's no need to destroy anybody. There is clashes of ideologies. There is clashes of religions. That's because they're not really concerned with truth. The ideology is just an expression of human ego. So then, even intellectually speaking too, intellectuals hate each other. But that's because they're not true lovers of knowledge. They're intellectuals. And for them, intellectualism is their means of promoting themselves. So once it's the means is to promote yourself, so obviously you're going to have a state of hostility against anyone who challenges your ideas. But Talmidei Chacham, genuine Talmidei Chacham, who really value truth, so they're in a state of peace. They don't have any desire to hurt anybody. And if you disagree with them, so it's a quiet discussion. So you discuss it, and then you're happy that the person criticizes you, like the Rambam. The Rambam welcomed criticism, because if I made a mistake, you're going to point it out to me. That's the ideal state. Now, obviously, not everybody's in that state, but we try to move closer to that state. That is the primary change. Well, we don't know how that's going to happen. We don't know how that's going to happen. That seems to be contained in the idea that the God is saying that God will circumcise the foreskins of your hearts, that certain factors will happen. But the Rambam resists, unlike the Ramban, the Rambam resists the idea that our nature will change. We will be different kinds of beings. And we will no longer have to grapple with conflict and free will. The Rambam resists that. The Rambam maintains that Olam Kiminhago Noeg. So these changes will occur. And there'll be a new recognition. People will have a new recognition of what the good is. And once that occurs, I can't give you the entire picture that Rambam talks about in general terms. But the main features will be the restoration of Israel, the nation of Israel, whose purpose is to be the teachers of mankind. So that will occur, because without that, you can't have this process. The restoration of Israel, and Israel will, the king, the Melech HaMashiach, the Messianic king, will be a being of tremendous wisdom, greatness. There'll be a prophet, almost like Moshe Rabbeinu, and he'll be the teacher. He'll be a tremendous force, a catalyst in bringing all this about. So once that occurs, the energy of the entire world, not just the Jews, will be towards the development of this wisdom. That's why they'll look up to the Jews, because they'll recognize that the Jews are the ones who have been entrusted with this metaphysical knowledge, and everything else will follow. So all of the resources that we have, it's an interesting thing if you study the development of the world, you could see how these things are very possible, which would have been difficult 500 years ago, because another feature will be tremendous abundance, that people will no longer have to have this tremendous struggle for existence, this rat race, so to speak. He says in those days, everything, all the luxuries will be very, very easily obtainable. Almost like going back to the Gan Eden. Now, if you said this 500 years ago, you say, well, that can only come about through some kind of miracle. Because you couldn't see it. Then people have to work very hard for subsistence. But in this day and age, with all these technological breakthroughs and the development of all these kinds of energies and atomic energy and so on and so forth, you can already see that what's preventing this, what's preventing everybody from having a certain standard is only these bad emotions, negativity, the fact that it's used, all the technology is essentially being used for aggressive purposes. But if everybody in the world were righteous, all the governments were righteous, and they got together and banded together to share all the technological and all the resources, you could eliminate poverty, you could eliminate disease to a tremendous extent, even now. I just want to add one more word here, that this is the way I interpret the pasuk. The psukim referring to Yemos HaMashiach are, you know, somewhat hidden, cryptic. It's not explicit. But there's the famous pasuk that they will turn their swords into plowshares. You've all heard of that pasuk. They will turn their swords into plowshares, which is a reference to the fact that instead of fighting, they will no longer learn war anymore. That's one of the features, that the nations will not have these huge defense budgets, building up all these military establishments. And instead, it'll be plowshares. They'll be involved in productive economic activity. I wanted to go one step further. This is my interpretation. That it's not just telling you what's going to happen, but it's also giving you an insight into how it's going to happen. Because if you just take a look at these changes that I've been referring to, these technological changes, and these the discovery of new types of energies, what was the motivating factor that brought it about? War. It wasn't just abstract studying of the possibilities. It's all under the input, for example, atomic energy, the atom bomb. The motive was because of war. And the Germans on their side, they wanted to obtain it. And this is an amazing story, how it came about that the United States beat them to the punch, so to speak. But a lot of the scientists that developed it originally came from Germany. But they had to escape because they were Jewish and other than persecution. So in effect, in one way or another, Hitler was helping us out. But that is true. Many of these new technologies, the motive for discovering them and working on them is the aggressive impulse. So the aggressive impulse will serve a purpose. However, once the truth is discovered, then people will take all of the developments that they've achieved because of the aggressive impulse and now redirect it towards the positive. So, because all of these things have tremendous potential, atomic power, and so on and so forth, tremendous potential to ease the problems of mankind. So that's what I believe the pasuk is telling you, not just what's going to happen, but the manner in which it's going to happen. So it means, however, that in that era, people will be born and they'll live a lifespan. Everything will be improved. It'll be a longer lifespan because there'll be tremendous ease, and most of the causes of death now, of premature death, will be removed. The lifespan will probably expand because of health. People will be healthier. We'll assume that they'll discover more cures because the energy will be directed towards constructive things. However, people will live and people will die. It just means in that era, it'll be unlike today, when the overwhelming majority of people missed the boat, missed the opportunity to achieve Olam Haba, to achieve eternal life because they're involved in falsehood. That's the tragedy. Most of the peoples of the world are involved in falsehood. But then anyone being born in that time will have a much better opportunity because the whole world, imagine if the whole world was filled with the study, not just of, I don't use the term religion, the study of truth, the study of genuine Torah and truth. That was the whole involvement of the world. And all, every society had given that with television, with the internet, with all these tools, they'd all be used for the correct purpose. So everybody being born into that society will naturally gravitate towards the good. So if he does so, he benefits himself and he obtains eternal life. But that's what the Rambam says, that they're not going to live forever because it's not in the nature of man to live forever. But the whole quality of life will be a different one. If that's the case, what is the idea of resurrection and where does it fit in? Now, the Rambam holds that resurrection of the dead will take place at that time period. So it is something which is associated with the Messianic era, which, as we've said, is a new phase in history, not the termination of human history. And it would seem that, obviously, it's not the ultimate reward, because the ultimate reward is Olam Haba. In a sense, you may say that a person who is brought back, who is resurrected, is coming from a higher state of existence to a lower state of existence. It seems, however, that we can posit certain purposes. First and foremost would seem to be that these are personalities who have a special role to play in bringing about these changes. That's the first thing. Because, as we said, we don't know how they're going to take place. But obviously, it's going to, a major fact will be the influence of great individuals. And that we know throughout history that great individuals, with whether for the good or for the bad, with tremendous talent and charisma and ability to communicate, for example, have played a great role. So that's one of the mechanisms. Here will be righteous people who, God knows who, God is the one, obviously, who decides, that their abilities, their human abilities, their personalities and so forth will have a tremendous role to play. That's one factor in terms of who would be brought back. Other factors have been mentioned in that while it's true that a person lives a righteous life, so there's the idea of a share in the world to come. He has a share in the world to come. So let's say a person died. And he made his best efforts and he struggled during his own time of history. But there is a benefit to living in different times of history and having associations with different people. So it may be that had you or anyone, even though you were righteous, we see that idea by Noach, Chazal compare Noach to Avram. Had you been exposed to certain people in that history, it would give you a greater opportunity. So that could be another factor. In that sense, it's a benefit. That you have an opportunity to come back and encounter different personalities. And different personalities, when they come together, that itself creates a new phenomenon. They bring the state of learning and understanding to a higher level. So there's a number of possibilities over here. It's difficult for us to, pinpoint every one of them. And one time I had the thought, and I'm just presenting it as a thought, I can't say it for sure, that it made sense to me anyways. So I'm just suggesting it as a possibility. That perhaps there are individuals who succumbed. The Rambam says, for example, different causes of evil in the world. So he has three major causes. The second major cause, the main cause of most of the evil, he says, is what people do to themselves, that they live irrationally and they pursue the wrong things and they put themselves in unnecessary danger. And when it happens, they get upset. But this is something they brought on themselves. But the second cause, he says, is the harm that people do to other people. And that's a misuse of free will. So there is such a thing. There are people who are good people. And they may just get caught up in a situation. where they were a victim. A person can be a victim. Didn't deserve it, but that's what happens. So it could be, of course you'll say, well, why wasn't that person protected? But that's a very complicated thing in terms of the hashkacha. That God does not necessarily intervene for every person in every situation, and we don't know what determines it, but in general it has to do with the level of that person's closeness to God to warrant a certain kind of divine intervention. These are complicated matters, so it could be that due to circumstances, some people, good people, perished before they had an opportunity to raise themselves to a higher level. So it could be that the idea of the resurrection, that some people will now have an opportunity to perfect themselves to a higher degree. These are the various possibilities that have been suggested. As I said, this last one I'm suggesting myself. But that is the idea, the way the Rambam has it, that it should not be regarded as the ultimate reward. Indeed, those people who are resurrected will return to this world, will live for a period of time. We don't know how long. Assume it's a long period of time. But then they'll die.